I don't understand how sound works.
Well, it's waves, isn't it?
Yeah, but
so it's like vibrations that travel in waves from the point of origin to your ear, and your ear sort of picks up the vibrations and translates it into, sort of decodes it into a language that your brain can understand.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Over here,
it's a wonder.
At the bottom, it says infinite,
yeah.
And then it goes 60, 50, 40, 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, 0.
Yeah.
Right, which everything else you measure on a scale going upwards, don't you? Pretty much. But, like, if I go down here...
To infinite. Yeah.
You can't hear me.
Nope.
But if I go up here to 5...
Yeah.
You can hear me. I'm almost too loud.
But
the nearer you get to 0...
The louder it is. It's like a human life, isn't it?
Yeah.
The closer you get to the infinite,
yeah,
it doesn't exist. You can't hear it. But if you shrink and compact time down, then it makes more sense. It becomes tangible, doesn't it?
Are you reading A Brief History of Time?
No.
Something's going on with you at the moment.
I'm not reading anything. I'm being productive, though. God almighty, it felt good this weekend.
You got some stuff done.
Just to pour creativity out of my fingers. I loved it.
It's just the other podcast. You went a bit Carl Sagan on me.
All right.
It excited me.
All right. It's always on my mind.
No, not Pet Shop Boys.
Especially...
Or Elvis. Not a Pet Shop
Boys
song.
But it's my birthday tomorrow.
What? 40th?
39th.
God, I'm so old.
So I'm... Time and ageing is on my mind at the moment.
Well, you can't talk about either of those because those are not subjects we do have on this show. Subjects we do have on this show.
Oh, yeah, okay. All the time.
How are you feeling then?
Chipper.
Chipper.
Yeah.
Chipper.
Chipper.
Not
yeah.
Jipper.
Which
I'm
is
not
no
sure what
good.
That means.
It won't last, Nick. It won't last.
You're feeling chipper. Well, yeah. But, like, you've already been 38.
True.
That turned out not to kill you.
It fucking... 38 had a really good go, actually.
Yeah, but, like, you've got to be... Because you didn't take it very well, turning 38, did you? I can't remember your birthday, was
no,
it?
No, I was
quite,
fine. I think I was fine
with
38. Are
you okay? Are you
yeah.
all right with your birthdays?
Yeah.
I'm
fine. I've kind of come to peace with being... I think I've always been a bit old. So I've kind of come to peace with the fact that now I'm now... I am middle-aged. I'm 39. If that's not middle-aged... Oh, no, you're not middle-aged till you're in your mid-40s. I'm not going to make 90. Fuck off.
I'm not sure I can face 90.
Yeah, I mean, knocking on the door now of, like, implausibly old... If I'm not middle-aged by now, I'm middle-aged.
I want to see grandchildren, but you know,
I saw grandchildren at the weekend. They weren't mine, but
no. But I mean, I would like to see Noah. I would like to see how that turns out for him. But if I imprint on him loose morality and stuff like that, I could see grandchildren within the next 15 and a half years.
Isn't this the point with kids, right? I want to live to a point where my dying won't be too heartbreaking for us. So I'd like to maybe have either a disease that's a blessed release or, you know, or something. But you sort of think to yourself, don't you, about your kids, oh, well, I'd like to see them at least. What is enough, though? You know, I'd like to see my daughter retire. It's not going to happen.
Grandchildren.
I'd like to see grandchildren, but then you've got...
Up to the age of about 5 or 6.
Oh, so your death is truly heartbreaking at a really sort of...
No, well, I mean, okay, if we're talking about how much impact, I'd like it to be in their teens. I'd like them to learn what death means from a pet before they learn it from me. But if we're talking about what I need to be satisfied,
yeah.
I'll feel happier once they're... old enough to like recognize me, and I'll get to feel like granddad for a couple of years and hopefully still have my faculties. I mean, I'll be lucky. I'm old and not entirely on top of things as it is.
No. But it's not my age that's making me preoccupied with my, because I'm more preoccupied with my health than I used to be. But it's not my age. It's definitely my daughter. I don't think I'd have given up cigarettes as easily as I have this year if it wasn't for Scarlett. because I give a shit if they make me really ill, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas maybe I did give a shit before, but in a kind of selfish way that I could kind of compartmentalise.
In an intellectual way, really.
Yeah, you know, and sort of like, oh, well, you know, what's the point? You've got to go, something's got to get you, innit?
I've got to do something about my eating.
Well, me too, but my toe is almost healed, so I can get my exercise food back on, back in the swimming pool, nice and positive 39, I think.
Yeah, I feel good about your 39th year.
I feel all right about it.
I can't see anything really bad happening to you in your 39th year, health-wise.
Right.
Looking ahead.
Oh, here we go.
You've got at least 5 years.
That's good.
But after that, be very careful around large bodies of water.
Always with the water, isn't it? And I love swimming.
Or small bodies of water, because like you can drown in a puddle.
That's true. I love swimming. It's a shame. No, but I've lost my train of thought, to be honest with you. Just I keep thinking about you in swimming shorts. Oh, no, we've decided what we're going to do for our 40th. Nicola and I, did we say? I don't know.
No.
Nicola and I, our 40ths, are about a month apart from each other next year. Nicky turned 39. Will turn 39. In a month's time. So happy birthday, Nicola. But we've already decided that we're going to take Scarlett to Disney World Paris. That's going to be our 40th birthday treat.
That'd be nice.
Is we're going to treat our daughter. Because I don't see the point of doing things for myself.
Have you ever been to Disneyland?
In LA, yes, but not Disney World Paris.
Oh, in LA. Oh. How many times have you been to the one in LA?
Well, once.
When? How old were you?
7.
Oh, okay. I thought it was something you'd done as an adult. No, you probably can't even really remember it.
Oh, no, I can. I can remember it reasonably well. I'm 7, so I've got quite a queer memory. That was just the most unbelievable holiday of my life. We went around the world. My grandparents and some of my other family lived in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out via Singapore, stopped in Singapore for a few days, and then went and spent a month in New Zealand, Christmas.
Blimey, before the Hobbits even got there.
Absolutely. So Christmas 82 into 83. And then just after New Year, we travelled back via LA and then went to Disneyland. And bless them, my parents ran out of money on the last day, so we missed out on Universal Studios.
Oh.
And I think I don't think it was Venice Beach, but we definitely went to the beach while we were staying in LA, which was lovely.
Can I just clarify something? You were how old?
7.
So you and Nicola weren't together yet?
No, Nicola and I were living in different counties at that point.
Oh.
We were yet to meet. We're about a year away from our first...
Really?
2 years away from meeting.
Seriously?
Not to be together, but first time I met Nicola, we were like 9 years old, 10 years old.
That is crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew that you met...
And we kind of knew each other at school, not like really well. And I remember Nicky had scoliosis, which is curvature of the spine.
Mm-hmm.
So when she was about 12 or 13, she had a hell of a lot of time off school because she had to spend that year in a striker frame with a full body cast. Well, might as well be a full body cast, torso cast, a top half. Mm-hmm. So I kind of remember her from then, but Nicola flowered around 14. And then I really noticed Nicola... after that point, so I have better memories of her from when she came back from the surgery than I do from beforehand.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cute.
We've known each other for pretty much most of our lives.
That's pretty intense. Yeah. I met Amy in my mid 30s.
Mm.
I was pretty much I enjoyed my 30s though.
Yeah.
Well, the latter half of my 30s, I really really enjoyed. I think because I was so resigned to it all by then.
Yeah.
Genuinely, that's where my any positive outlook or positive mental outlook I have now is because I didn't care as much about stuff as I did before because I figure, meh.
The thing I like most about my late 30s is just I'm quite self-aware, so I get quite blue at times. Mm. But I'm really self-aware of it, so everything can be quite nicely controlled through that sort of self-awareness for the most part. Yeah, I'm happier in my late 30s than I think at any other point in my life, generally.
Hmm.
Things are nicer. The thing about taking Scarlett away is, you know, I've found now in my late 30s, I enjoyed my 20s, went out and did great things, enjoyed my 30s, used to get a lot of gigs and that sort of thing. Used to enjoy myself in the way that you do when you're out and you haven't got children. But I've sort of discovered in my late 30s the thing that makes me happiest is my daughter enjoying herself, being part of my family. And it's sort of, so, you know, when it came to the point where we decide what we're going to do to celebrate our 40th, I can't think of anything I'd rather do than be with my family and enjoying them, enjoying themselves. It's almost like, you know, I don't live vicariously through Scarlett, because, like, when we go to theme parks and stuff, I have fun too. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You know, less so since the blood pressure, you know, but it's, that's what I don't really, you know, don't really care about all that other stuff anymore.
No?
No, I mean, I'd still like to see bands from time to time, but it doesn't fuss me that I very rarely get to. But I don't really drink alcohol much anymore, so going out to the pub or a bar doesn't really bother me.
You're such a wuss.
No, I'm just sort of, you know, content? Not content. A wuss.
You sicken me.
Good.
So what's brought this on, though, anyway? You gigantic pansy.
I don't know. I feel very centred. I had a nice, it's my creative weekend has made me feel good, I think.
I had a creative weekend. I played about 2 hours of Terraria, which is all digging holes, which was good.
Like Minecraft, right?
Yeah, yeah. I accidentally dug a hole and made all the water go into the cabin that I was in, and I didn't mean to.
That's fucking idiotic.
I thought I had a plan, but it kind of backfired, because water's a ferocious element, and it just all went wrong really, really quickly.
You get too much water, it's just, it will not behave itself.
It was hubris on my part.
Who's it? Wasn't he in some 90s rom-coms?
Yes. No,
Welsh actor, isn't he?
Hubris. Yeah, I think so. Welsh Jewish.
Oy vey.
And
sheep. That's what I've got for you.
That's what you've got.
Oy vey. Oy vey with all these sheep already.
Pretty sure that's offensive, but I can't work out how.
Really, with all your sheep all the time. Why don't you phone your mother?
And also I played more of this game called Banished, which is a city-building thing that I've talked about. Still not entirely sure I'm enjoying it, but it's kind of like maths. It feels like a puzzle that I need to solve. When I say it's kind of like maths, what I mean is it's exactly like maths, because it's all algorithms with a graphical interface over the top of it, which is all any video games are, really. But
it's all life is, really, isn't it?
I was thinking about that exact thing this morning. Mm. I actually was. Chaos theory.
Yeah.
It's all, when you get down to the details, it's all just numbers.
We're all made out of string.
We are all made out of string and meat.
Yeah.
But meat is made out of string too. So we're made out of string and also meat, but the meat, when you look at it closer, is made out of string too.
Mm. It's a crazy mixed up world out there.
We're all made out of string. That's...
It's good. Strong. Sounds like the title of a Spray song, admittedly.
I don't know what Spray is.
They are a nihilist pop synth band.
Spray.
And they did the my favourite nihilist pop synth. Well, Ricardo Autobahn is one of them.
Oh,
and you know
the guy
Ricardo
who does
Autobahn.
No, one of us.
But We're All Made of Stars is my favourite of their songs. It's beautiful.
Ricardo, you listen to some weird music. So I want to talk about some of the weird music I listened to this weekend. It wasn't that weird, it was just weird that I was listening to it again. But I want to know more about your productive weekend.
I was writing. We've spoken, haven't we, about maybe sort of expanding our podcasting horizons?
Maybe.
Possibly. Who knows? And I'd been noodling on about the fact, because my background, the reason I'm drawn to podcasting is I come from a house where Radio 4 was pretty much always on in the background somewhere. So spoken word radio makes sense to me. It is the background of my life. It's the sort of hum that plays in the background of my existence. So I'd been going on about how I thought it'd be nice to maybe do some radio plays, and I'd found a website where there were some IP-free scripts and so forth that we could possibly use. And you kind of challenged me, and I don't know if you remember, on Thursday. I think I mentioned it to you again on Thursday. And he kind of jabbed me in the tummy and suggested I just get writing.
I spent a lot of last week not quite knowing what was going on because of the salt, because of dehydration from Monday.
Overly salted from the pot noodle incident.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that does ring a bell.
So you did, and I did. So I sort of sat there on Sunday. I'd had an idea in my head for a little while. It's kind of a cornball sort of mystery adventure thing set in the 50s. But it just kind of poured out of me a little bit. I sort of by the time we got to Sunday afternoon, I'd sort of written 3 acts and 13 pages, and I got a first draft done, so I was really, really pleased with myself.
That's really good, man.
Well, you haven't read it yet.
Okay, I mean, it might not be really good, but it's really good that you're doing something.
Yeah, no, I'm really pleased. I'm going to send it to you to read, not you, listener. I'm talking to Nick, to read tonight. So I'd like some constructive criticism, because Nicola said she thought it was nice and good.
But that's what wives are for.
It made her laugh.
But well, spouses. Yeah. Don't want to be sexist.
That's true.
You said about expanding our podcast horizons. The main reason is I've been, as we do this more and we put more work into it, I've been thinking about audience, and I've worked out that the best way to get a larger audience is if, say, and I'm not saying these are definitive numbers, but if, say, we have literally 10 people listening to each podcast, well, every time we start doing a new podcast, that's an extra 10 people.
What if it's the same 10?
I'm cancelling that in my area. I didn't hear what you just said.
Okay.
But yeah, Sam Binney said something about her her husband wondering why she doesn't just write, why she dicks around on Twitter until 2 a.m. and then starts working. And I was like, you're letting people behind the curtain there a bit, Sam.
That's fair enough.
It's not, you shouldn't, that's not, it's not for other people to understand that that's how we writers do things. Which is my excuse for why you spent your weekend actually producing something, whereas I've got loads of different things I should have been writing, and I spent my weekend playing Terraria, which is like Minecraft only 2D.
I've also sketched and banished. Also sketched out an idea for a second play in a similar vein.
Oh, shut up! You make me sick.
So that's,
no, you don't.
I'll start working on that next weekend.
I'm really,
another
really
13
glad.
Pages on their way.
I am going to measure myself against you and realise that I'm a bit shorter.
Well,
and then I'm going to think, maybe measuring myself against the tallest person I know at the moment wasn't a smart idea.
Yeah, but maybe you'll realise when you read it. I mean, to be fair, it's a radio play, so there's very little descriptive prose. All you're doing is you're writing dialogue.
Have you remembered to say who each person is that's talking?
Yeah,
because I believe that's half the trick with scripts.
Yeah, it's saying the names often enough.
Saying the names of who the people are talking.
Yeah, and then of course I get self-referential about the exposition. So all of my characters, or at least one of them, is extremely self-aware that they're involved in exposition.
You told me that the second act, you sent me a message that said, second act down, so there's lots of, or maybe you actually said it to me in person, you said, second act down, there's a lot of exposition in it, and then I sort of thought, well, no, that's right, the second act is traditionally known as the exposition act. Yeah. That's where...
There's a fair bit in the first act as well, but none, it's all action in the third.
The first act is be quirky, get their attention, and then the second act is, the second act can be as boring as you want it to be, because that's where you're doing all the heavy lifting.
Oh, it's not boring. It's hilarious.
And then the third act is the twist, or the rooftop sequence, always.
Think the final act, Dr. No, but underwater.
Wasn't that one of the other James Bond films?
Maybe. Well, no. Well, Thunderball was underwater, but it was, and there was always, what was the one, is it, For Your Kiss Only.
For Your Kiss Only.
Yeah.
The one with...
The Spy with the Golden Kiss.
Yeah. They're all pretty much interchangeable. Yeah. If you're talking about...
There's definitely a lot of Bond going on in the third act.
When you could say that the Bond women, their only purpose is to be sexual foils for James Bond, you could say that they were interchangeable.
That's true. See, what I've done, though, I've subverted that by making the female character the smart one. Because that's not been tried before.
No one's ever tried that.
No. That is original thought right there.
I saw you at the weekend.
You did. That was really nice, actually. Yeah.
I brought your pressure washer around.
You did. Thank you for that.
That was good. I wasn't doing productive stuff while I was doing that, except, strictly speaking, bringing the pressure washer around was productive.
That's good. I'll need it soon because it's almost spring.
And I had a cup of tea. That was nice. You made a nice cup of tea. Scarlett doesn't find me as fascinating as she did when she was younger.
No, after you left, she really regretted not interacting with you more. You left and she was, what's wrong, Scarlett? I wanted Uncle Nick to play with me.
Did she not realise that she had to show an interest?
Well, that's what I said to her. I said, well, if you want people to play with you, you need to tell them that you... To be fair, Steve and Jane really reaped the benefits of that in the evening because she got really excited when they came round. I think she'd learnt her lesson by then. Because I did say to her when Jane and Steve come round this evening, if you want to play with them, you're going to have to let them know that you want to play with them.
Those guys totally glomming off all my hard work.
Almost certainly.
But when I drove over, it was quite nice. Because the weekend was quite nice, because I woke up with Noah. Amy had a lie-in on Sunday, and so...
A lie-in?
A lie-in on Sunday. And so I spent quite a lot of the weekend with Noah, with just the two of us. It was nice. I love him. We were talking about... I will get back to visiting you. But we were talking about how weird it is, and you will have probably found this with Scarlett. You don't notice them changing. They still look... When they're first born, they're all a bit like potatoes. But, like, some of them do still look quite distinctive. So, with him, he had features. He definitely had features that were very specific to him. And we haven't noticed those changing, really. Like, sometimes you'll say, oh, his eyes look a bit more like you now than they did, like yours now than they did when he was younger. Not yours, James. Mine and Amy's.
It's fortunate we have very similar colouring as far as your eyes are concerned, isn't it?
Yes, that's very fortunate. And the suggestion being that you might be his real father. He is quite tall. He's getting a lot taller, a lot quicker. But anyway, so you notice...
Is he fat and neurotic? Because then that's...
All babies are a bit fat.
That's
and
true.
They cry for no apparent reason.
And neurotic, yeah. There you are.
But so you kind of notice the odd thing like that. You'll maybe check in every now and then and go, oh, yeah, his hair's more curly now. It wasn't before and stuff like that. But generally speaking, it feels like they're not changing very much. He still looks very much like... We remember him looking when he was little. He was quite a distinctive looking baby then, and he's like quite a distinctive looking 7 month old now.
I did that thing where I said bloody hell very quietly under my... Has it really been seven months?
Yeah,
it really?
July, so yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yes, it really has been.
Why would you lie to me?
But actually, we realised at the weekend that he has changed quite a lot. And it's weird because you only notice it when you look at pictures of him when he was smaller, when he was younger, at which point you're like totally blown away by how very, very different he actually looks. He looks more like a little person now.
I had a thing like that at the weekend with Scarlett. I was in the bedroom writing and she came to see me and she was sat on my knee and on the table we got in the bedroom where the computer is. There's a picture of her. She must have been about 7 months, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But there's... I think you bought it for us. This funny little... It's a little blanket thing. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of the blanket is an Eeyore head.
All right.
And
yeah, like a
comforter,
yeah,
thing. Like a little mini comforter. And I was playing with her, because she was a very giggly, laughy baby. I was playing with her, and I'd put it on her head. And I took a photograph, and it's sort of... She's wearing it like a funny sort of hat on her head. And she was going, is that me? Is that me as a baby? And I'm like, yeah, that's you as a baby. I bet you can't remember that. And she's like, no. And I was sitting there thinking, actually, who the fuck is that kid?
Doesn't look a thing, yeah.
Because you're Scarlett. This tangible, fleshy thing sat on my knee. You're Scarlett. I know you. We interact. We've got a relationship. But what was my relationship with that person? Who the hell are they? Well, it's very funny how Scarlett... I've taken this off on a tangent, but it's really weird. Actually, I've noticed how Scarlett deals with time and also her own growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
She'll say, "I did that when I was a baby,"
mm-hmm.
but it's something she did last week. Basically, anything that was yesterday or further back in her history was yesterday when I was a baby.
Hmm, that's weird.
Which is, it is really odd how she sort of, she doesn't really understand.
She's engaging with the past in a way that...
She is, but it's a very strange way she's doing it. I was a baby when I was doing that. Those undesirable behaviours I was showing, I was a behaviour, so I was a baby. So I think it's kind of, she's trying to absolve herself of silliness.
Are they always undesirable things?
Not always, but often.
Hmm. So well, do you think strange. She's trying to absolve herself, or do you think she's trying to tell you and herself that she's learning stuff, she's getting...
I think possibly that as well. I think she's trying to...
It's not
to
all about
of,
blame, James.
She's trying... Yeah, I think... No, but I think she's trying to mark off development as well. Mm. It's like, I'm a grown-up girl, you know, I'm sort of... It's very strange.
It's really interesting.
It's really cute.
When I drove over, though, it was quite nice driving. But the thing I wanted to mention was... When I'm in the car, I've been grabbing CDs off the side because it's easier to listen to CDs in there than it is on the iPod, it feels like to me. And my CDs, I've kept hold of all of them, but you don't really use them anymore. Even now, when I buy new music, I still buy the CD and then I rip the CD because I like having the physical media there. I don't like being given a license to have the audio. I want the actual thing. And which is naive because it'll just be like tapes, won't it? In 10 years' time, or 15 years' time, or 6 years' time, or whatever, it'll be unusual to have a CD player in your house, probably.
Got a box full of the bastards. Although I have to say, I went past the Oxfam record shop the other day. I'm really hankering to have a record player again. I don't look like a hipster, I don't think. But do you know the album was that made me think, I wish I could go in there and buy that. It was a compilation of Jelly Roll Morton tunes.
I don't know who that is.
Jelly Roll Morton was a jazz pianist from the turn of the last century.
Jelly Roll Morton.
Grew up in a whorehouse. And
jazz pianist.
Yeah, and the Jelly Roll in his name, I believe, refers to a trademark manoeuvre used by one of the sex workers in said whorehouse that would help her clients arrive.
Okay.
The jelly roll.
Okay.
Mm.
The...
No, he's a pianist, sorry, in a brothel.
He wasn't brought up in one.
I think he may have been. I know, what was it?
You really need to get your facts straight.
I know he played piano as a very young man, so he kind of was brought up in a bordello.
So I pulled out three CDs. I didn't listen to the Public Enemy one, but I did listen to, I got two albums. One was Bomb the Bass, and I can't remember the name of the album, but
Tim
it isn't the
Simenon.
First one. Yep. Tim Simenon. It isn't the one with Mega Blast on, it's the one with Bug Powder Dust on.
Yeah.
And also, I got I was listening to an album by Tim O'Mass called Quiet or something like that. I can't remember what the albums were called. They were right there in front of me.
What you should
as
do
well.
Is find out later and just record yourself saying the word.
Yeah, I will. Mute or something like that. I think it's something to do with being quiet.
Organic geese.
But it struck me as really strange. I really enjoyed listening to both of them. I listened to both of them in the car. I got a bit stuck in traffic, and I apparently don't mind getting a bit stuck in traffic going around, because really it's a 5-minute drive, but it ended up taking a lot longer.
Depends. It's Saturday in Southampton. Yeah. Very, very slow progress getting across town.
But it struck me as really strange because I felt like both of the albums were... I'd got them at roughly the same time, which would have been... And that same time was in the distant past. It felt like both were very old albums. Bug Powder Dust certainly reminds me of a time when everyone was referencing William Burroughs, and William Burroughs turned up on a Disposable Heroes. I think the second Disposable Heroes of Hip-Hopracy album was all like jazz industrial music with William Burroughs doing a spoken word on it. Which is amazing. It's called Spare Arse Annie and Other Stories.
He sat there asking them if they could help him find a vein that wasn't collapsed.
No.
Okay.
It was called
Between
Spare
his
Arse,
toes.
It was called Spare Arse Annie and Other Stories or Other Tales or something. Right. But the so I knew Bug Powder Dust was from the mid-90s, but I'd got it into my head that so was the Tim O'Mass album. And then I looked at the, while stuck behind a car, I looked at the indicia on the album, on the Timo Mas album. I think it might have been called Quiet. Something to do with sound, anyway. And it was 2001, which just struck me as very strange, because I was like, but this is an old album. How can it have come out in 2001? It's an old album. It's from a time in the very distant past. And then about 5 minutes after that, while I was listening to it, I realised what, of course, you're about to tell me, I think, which is, fucking hell, 2001 was ages ago.
Yeah, I was
like, more than a decade ago.
Imagine you're 13 years old and someone hands you, I don't know, this is roughly around the right time, Neil Young's After the Gold Rush.
Yeah.
And you're 13 years old, you're handed Neil Young's After the Gold Rush, you're like, fucking hell, this is old. It's only about 13 years ago when it came out, you know, it's the same difference. It's weird, isn't it, how I'd think 2001 is, and like all that millennial bullshit is really recent, but it's, but then I think the 90s still feel recent.
To me, I kind of feel like I met Amy, it feels to me like I met Amy in the mid-noughties. Whatever you want to call it. I hate that term.
I can't believe we're 14 years into this millennium and we still haven't got a way to describe. Are we just all marking off time until we can say the 20s?
Yeah.
Fuck
and so
that.
And so I identify that period, that decade, or certainly that last half of the decade as being since I've been with Amy, and it still feels like I haven't, not that I haven't been with Amy for that long, but that it still feels quite new. But actually, it isn't that new. We are moving out of the house that we've been in for 4 years, I think. We've been podcasting for around the same amount of time.
Knocking on the door of 5 years.
Yeah, and I've known her for 7 years, which is nearly a decade in itself. And actually, I met her, it was nearer to 2006, 2007 sort of thing. Yeah. And maybe when we are a cult hit, someone will go back through and annotate all of the episodes we've had, and we'll discover, as I'm sure we will discover, that one thing we could have in the search engine optimization for the show, and in the taglines, and in the notes about it, meet two men as they get. Like each week, these two men will get baffled by the passage of time, because that's to say, it is a recurring theme.
But it's like I said last week when I was thinking about Harold Ramis. I think we are at a point in our lives where actually marking the length of a human life is more possible for us at the moment than it has ever been throughout the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, because you can, like I said, you can so vividly remember people being in the prime of their lives. I'd suggest maybe the sort of age we are now.
Maybe a bit younger.
Who are now quite old and dying. You know, we're getting to that age where, like, the our parents' generation are now genuinely old people. We can now measure how long a human life is, which I think in your 20s and maybe even in your early 30s is very difficult to do.
It strikes me as really weird that there are people running around functioning as human beings now who, you know, I'd probably want to sleep with or be jealous of for being, like, better men than I am or whatever, who were probably not alive when I first danced to Creep by Radiohead.
Yeah.
Or, more surprisingly for me, when Nine Inch Nails... Because it's a weird example, but Creep were basically Radiohead were basically building on guitar music, which was already kind of, guitars have always been around, but I mentioned Disposable Heroes of Hip-Hopocracy then a bit ago, and Nine Inch Nails and bands like that who were part of this whole movement in music, the industrial music thing that later embarrassingly became nu metal, but there was genuinely playing with completely new sounds.
Industrial though was exciting and angry and provocative,
but it felt like the noises and the sounds, the instruments being used were very modern. The idea that is as old now as it is just baffles me. I still kind of think of hip hop as a new thing.
I still think of when someone, if I'm put on the spot, someone puts a gun to your head and say, you know, someone asks me to come up with like a dance music riff or something, it's almost certainly going to be something from Music by the Guilty Generation by the Prodigy, which
you were listening to it the other day, weren't you?
No, I was. I haven't listened to it for ages because I have it on tape.
Which Alex Dawson, who I've done one of these episodes with, was talking about it the other day, and that's what confused me. I get you and him mixed up all the time.
But it's like No Good Start to Dance is still like a sort of, or Their Lot, still like definitive dance tunes, as far as I'm concerned. That album is incredible, really, in terms of, it was so crossovery. It's sort of like, even if you were sort of into quite underground stuff, it was still really, you loved it, you know, it was still accessible. But that was, that's got to be knocking on the door of like 20, 25 years old.
At least 20.
I mean, my favourite album, like the Stone Roses by the Stone Roses, is like, is 25 years old this year. Which is mad. I remember it, buying it as a teen, you know, and being old enough to have complex emotions and have kind of similar feelings about the world that I do now. And it's 25 years ago, it's a quarter of a century ago that I first bought that album and listened to it. It seems baffling to me.
It is baffling. The passage of time is baffling. That's why we talk about it so much, I think.
Yes.
Do we talk about it a lot, though?
Maybe. So it shouldn't be called Two Grown Men. It should be called Two Men Rather Preoccupied with Their Aging. Oh, they also have kids.
I think the thing about it is, I don't feel like I'm preoccupied with me aging. I'm just preoccupied with the... It's like you just said, it doesn't feel like I've changed that much.
Well, that's true.
At all. It's just the world keeps rolling, but it's very confusing.
It's a good friend of mine tweeted something from Google Plus today. Sort of like made me realise that.
Is it me?
Yeah. So, oh God, there really is a generation of young men and women that look at me and think, you know, I'm just some middle aged dude. When I come to where we record this, I am most aware of this when we record podcasts, because to get here we have to come through the Student Union bar.
Yeah.
And I feel so incongruous in there.
That's because you still wear your tie and your bloody work.
I know. But
what's that called? Lanyard.
Lanyard. If I was 20 and I had my shirt and tie on, that's fine. There's a young dude. He obviously works in an office.
If you're still, fine. The lanyard kind of marks you out. Even if you were 20, it'd mark you out.
Do you know why I wear that? The reason the lanyard and the name badge is still on is because if I put it anywhere else, I'm going to forget it in the morning.
That's true.
And I need to wear my ID. So it stays on my around my neck until I get home. And then there's an ashtray that sits on our bookcase. Has to go in the ashtray with the keys.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I will forget it.
I had a session with some students and their lecturers earlier today. And I don't often...
Did you at any point clap your hands and say, okay, guys?
No.
Good.
But... because my job isn't really student facing, so it doesn't happen very often. And previously, when I had a student facing job, it was at a college, so all of the people, they were all in their teens, they were all like 14, 15 or 16, so after school, but before the rest of their lives, so 16-ish, 16 and 17.
You-tree-ish.
Yeah, no, James. Does U Tree, is the scope of U Tree paedophiles end anyone who likes anyone underage? I guess it probably is.
It is, yeah, that's exactly
what
it is.
But I really do wish you would stop using that as a, what is it?
I don't know.
A noun, a verb.
No,
noun?
Oh, God. I really don't know. Do you know, this really, I get really frightened that people are going to ask me.
The difference between a verb and a noun.
Yeah.
I get confused.
Because I'm sure I was off sick the day we did that, and I understand how words work and stuff, but I get all confused. Oh, God, Nick, we've just exposed ourselves horribly.
I know.
We're never going to be allowed to be in charge of words ever again, are we? I'm sorry, sir. If you can't adequately describe an adverb, I'm afraid I'm going to have to take that keyboard away from you.
Where do you bring adverbs up?
I don't know.
Why would you do that?
They're really terrifying, aren't they? What's a conjugated verb? I'm sorry, sir. If you're unable to conjugate your verbs, I'm going to have to stop you thinking.
What was that accent? That's one of your characters.
That's generic authority figure. Probably a policeman.
Right, okay. But so when I was dealing with college students, they were clearly younger than me, and I didn't... And they're all clearly younger than me, but they weren't great. They weren't adults. They are what we call young adults, but they weren't really adults. They were still kids.
Yadults.
Yadults. But when I'm around students here, they're expected to behave more like actual grown-ups. They're most of the time they don't. But and so when I'm sitting in a situation with their lecturers and these students, my natural headspace in that situation is to relate more to the students than I do to the grown-ups in the room. I'm doing air quotes because I'm horrible. But to them, and so I had this moment where I was listening to the lecturer thinking, well, that was a bit aggressive, or like there was no need for, or well, he's going on about this a bit, and kind of looking around the students and seeing them exchanging little looks of sort of amusement or collaborating. They were kind of empathising with each other, and they were having little jokes. No, they were having little like jokes between them, and I was thinking, yeah, it really is. This is kind of, I wish he'd do. And then I was thinking, no, because if they look at me, they see exactly the same thing. They probably don't know the difference between me and these old people.
And the lecturer,
one of whom is younger than me.
Yeah, I'm going to say,
I think.
I bet the lecturer is younger than you. It's only been the last year or so that I've like stopped identifying with teens who are out with their parents. Oh, yeah, fucking parents. It's awful. Oh, Jesus, you are more than young enough to
it's
be
so
my child.
It's so weird.
It's very odd. Yeah, I don't like it that I'm now empathising with the adults and not the kids. I actually don't understand the kids, to be honest with you. Nicola, I think I've mentioned this before, Nicola listens to Radio 1. I don't understand it anymore.
The thing is, I didn't really understand the kids when I was at school, so...
No, but I understood youth culture. I was inside youth culture. I got Radio 1, you know? There were parts of Radio 1. Steve Wright in the Afternoon was funny.
Yeah.
You know?
It felt funny at the time.
In a way that the bloke who does the Drive Time show now is as funny as something that's really not... I was going to go quite extreme then, and I thought, well, no, don't go extreme. It's not as funny as getting some sort of disease for which there is no cure.
We kind of stumbled into territory that a bit ago by accident when we were having the noun-verb thing, and then I was trying to work out what the word was. That I kind of wanted to mention, our friend Oki was over for pretty much the whole weekend this weekend.
Okay.
She doesn't listen. She probably doesn't listen. But anyway, so I was on the computer a lot, and Amy and she were watching lots of trashy TV, and they were watching a show called The Undateables, which normally I find pretty hard work anyway. Because it's basically all of these people who are apparently undateable, normally because they've got some sort of disability or some sort of handicap, actually, that I'd always assumed before I saw any of it that it was just people who were really awful.
Is it this was my prejudice, is it a Channel 4 show that is dressed up as an empowering experience for the individuals that participate in it, while really... all it is a tour around Bedlam.
Yes. Although I kind of feel like after having peripherally taken in some of it, I kind of feel like this one is done a bit less sensationally
than
others.
That's how they suck you in.
Well, yeah, okay. So most of the episodes, I'm just hearing bits of them and finding it really sad or depressing or whatever, because I find it difficult not to empathise with the situations anyway. But there was the last of them that they were watching, I felt really got under my skin, and I had to keep getting up and going over and seeing what the people looked like, who they were and stuff, because I was finding it very... For some reason, it was bothering me, and I was thinking maybe it's just because there's been a few episodes now and the spell is starting to work on me. But then I was reading the write-up on the iPlayer, or not the iPlayer, whatever it is, the 4OD or whatever.
Yeah.
And I realised that the three people who it was dealing with, one was quite autistic, one had Tourette's, he was a young guy who like was pretty switched on, that had Tourette's, pretty severe Tourette's that came up when he was really stressed out. And the other was this girl who'd been a... student. She was lovely, actually. Not that it matters if someone's lovely and then something awful happens to them, but she was absolutely lovely, and she was really sort of in her class. She was the one who was doing interviews and stuff for magazines and stuff like that. Not being interviewed, was she was quite outgoing and a communicator and stuff like that. And then she had a stroke when she was 18.
Wow.
And ever since then has had aphasia.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got full mobility and stuff like that, but can't find words. And she can be looking at a menu and understand what she wants and stuff like that, but just won't be able to put it into words, won't be able to write it down or anything. And I looked at these three things written down there, and I was like, oh, that's why this bothered me so much. I don't want to trivialize those things by claiming I understand those conditions at all, because I don't. But of all of the things that were going on, the people who had physical handicaps and stuff like that, I can't really relate to. But the neurological disorders and the inability to understand social cues that happens in autism, or the realization that sometimes you're not entirely in control of, because I don't have actual tics, but I have to, recently I've had to realize that sometimes when I'm getting annoyed or agitated sat at my desk, there are things that I'm kind of saying under my breath that don't actually make any sense. Do you know what I mean? It's not the same as Tourette's, but that idea that there are things bubbling under the surface of your unconscious, or you know, they didn't even necessarily mean anything, that can spill over when you're stressed out, I find very difficult. And aphasia terrifies me. And as I get older and my brain gets less of a workout, I'm finding it more and more hard to just pull to mind words that I used to know. And I look at my dad, who is... I remember him as being this incredibly smart, switched on guy, really thoughtful, and there are just huge gaps in his ability to process the world around him, not because of any particular condition he's got, just because he's getting older and slowing down. These are all things that scare me a little bit, because they feel like they're only just at the very edge of my personal experience.
There's something about that your faculties going in a relatively soft way as you get older that I find comforting. Because if I reach old age, I'm not sure I want to be quite as... I don't want to think as much as I do now.
It's literally all I've got, James.
I always think back to, there's an episode of Seinfeld where George and Jerry are assigned, and Elaine decide to become pals.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scheme where you become pals, companions to elderly folk.
I just realised you're talking about fucking Seinfeld.
And George is assigned this guy who's extremely upbeat. But there's this wonderful scene in the diner where George is freaking out, going, "How do you operate every day knowing this could be the last? You're so close to the end. How do you cope?" And that's kind of my great fear for old age, is I kind of don't want to be preoccupied or on death when I get older. I kind of want to be losing my faculties.
But you already are preoccupied with death.
Yeah, but I'd like that to lessen as I get older. And in some ways it does kind of lessen as I get older. I'm not quite so freaked out by the concept. But I love that. If you want to know really where my headspace is in terms of that and aging, that scene with George and the old dude is kind of, how do you wake up every morning knowing it could be your last?
But that's not about faculties, is it? That's about coming to terms with things.
Possibly, I don't know.
You need to come to terms with things.
The only reason you think it's easy to come to terms is because you work in an academic institute and it's nothing but terms here.
I see, because that's how we measure time.
Mm.
I get you, yeah. No, you're right.
That was clever on at least more than one level.
On one level, exactly one level.
It was barely funny on one level.
So I think we pretty much minimised... how upset people should be about when their parents start getting old and losing their faculties. I've compared my plight to that of three people with genuine problems.
Well, you are undateable, Nick. I mean, that's fair.
But I got married. I found someone. It's fine.
You're lucky. Amy's a very caring sort of person. She probably sees her marriage to you very much as like doing society. It's social work for her.
Community service.
That's it. Yeah, it was that or pick up rubbish by the side of the motorway, Nick.
I get the feeling you'd rather not be angry and stressed out, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
See, I really like it sometimes. We
can go into this in more detail. It's because I'm a big dude, and I've always been big, and losing my temper means I'm scary.
But you don't get intellectually angry, though, do you? You're like the Hulk. Mm-hmm. You get dumber the angrier you get.
Oh, very much so.
Whereas I find that if it's a certain sort of anger, I find myself becoming... It feels like the ideas come
a lot quicker. No, I have to stay calm or I lose
Except
control.
When I'm incoherent with anger and then I don't really know what's going on. The other thing that happened this weekend was... Amy Endocki marathoned the original Office, the UK Office.
Okay.
Which apparently Oki hadn't seen before. Amy's seen it a few times. I've seen it a few times. Haven't really got time to go into Ricky Gervais right now.
Good.
But having rewatched that programme, as much as I know that there is content in it that probably bothers a lot of people because it's as close to an honest representation of what the modern workplace is like, and that stuff should make you uncomfortable. That's kind of the point. As much as I think that Twitter and Ricky Gervais were maybe not meant to be put together, I find it very difficult to write him off the way a lot of people do as the arsehole that a lot of people do, because there is nothing more human and more humane than... There's loads of things that are more human and more humane.
That's really refreshing to hear you say.
But then the first two seasons of... They haven't watched the Christmas specials, so I don't want to spoiler it in my heart for them. Mm. But then that original British series, it's not heartwarming or sentimental exactly, but it gives... It shows everyone up to be horrible, but it also shows everyone, nearly everyone up to... Not be doing it out of malice.
Well, the thing I find hardest to understand about Ricky Gervais, whether people like the art he produces or not, is they don't seem to be able to get their head around that he's playing a character that he's been playing since the 90s. You know, was it the 11 o'clock show he used to appear on very early on, in an early series? His whole shtick on that show was he was an arsehole, and Ian Lee would basically bounce off him being an arsehole. Mm-hmm. And the whole shtick was he was so outrageous, Ian Lee would say, "Oh, I can't believe you're saying that." And it was the humour of outrage. But it's a persona that he is. I don't know him. He might be an arsehole in real life, but...
It's a fairly consistent, and he's defended himself. I think part of the problem for him, and I don't notice this happening as much with American comedians... Mm-hmm. But I have noticed it with a few people in the UK, and we've talked a little bit about Alf Garnett and people like that as well. Definitely Frankie Boyle too, who you know has gone off the rails sometimes, in the name of anything being on the table for comedy. But is that the most vocal part of their fan base? The biggest part of their fan base is made up of people who don't realise that the joke's at their expense.
I think the greatest example of that is actually Al Murray,
you mentioned before. Yeah. And it's that same kind of thing. And I don't know if it's... I've been thinking about this a lot this weekend. I don't know if it's that comedy... innately, that the problem with that comedy innately is it is always going to appeal more to those people. And then of course it's very difficult for someone like for anyone, especially a comedian who's probably desperate for validation. You've got two choices: you either end up hating your audience or you end up not realizing that your fans are mostly assholes. I don't know if the difference in cultures is that liberals, certainly here, don't appreciate that sort of comedy as much as you'd expect them to. It has to be very clear that it's satirical. I'm not saying that they don't understand that it's satirical. I'm just saying that the people who you would think would get the most from something that so viciously pokes at all of these problems that we have in our culture, that the left would gravitate towards something like that. But instead, the left finds all of the stuff in it that's ugly, and doesn't want to see it, would rather not see it. That in theory, that sort of thing should appeal to one group of people because they don't get that it's a joke and they think it's hilarious because they think, oh, it's just people, it's like Jeremy Kyle, isn't it? But it should also appeal to the sort of people who are like, yes, we are fucked. Maybe we should take this as someone shining a light on that and we should try and be nicer to each other. But what actually happens is this one group of people say, oh, yeah, it's really hilarious. Blah, let's go get some more lager. And the other group of people go, well, he's just a horrible little oik, isn't he, in that program? I don't want to watch a horrible little oik on the television. He shouldn't be allowed on the television. That's what it feels a little bit like. I haven't seen anything that shines as much of a light on British society and the way people behave and British culture. The only thing that's even comes close are things like the day-to-day and the stuff that's much more obviously satirical and at people's expense. But the difference is that in The Office, not necessarily in extras or anything else, but in The Office, Ricky Gervais gives everyone the chance to, like, you see those people are horrible, but you also kind of see that it's not, they're just ignorant. Mm-hmm. They're not like, they're not evil. They're not mean. Yeah. In another universe, the invention of lying should have been a really successful film among people in general. But religious people didn't like it because it said that religion was a lie. And other people didn't like it because they don't like Ricky Gervais. It was actually really, really good.
Anyway, we haven't got time to go really in depth in my feelings about Ricky Gervais. I still think he's funny, I think he's very funny.
Mm-hmm. Please take a look at past episodes that are on 2gm.co or 2grownmen.net. I'm talking to the listener, not to you, James. There are full show notes for every episode that will provide links to all of the things we've talked about. So if you're a young person listening to us talking about The Prodigy and you're thinking, oh, what's that? That sounds like old-timey music. You can look it up. Oh, and records. I'll maybe post a link to the Wikipedia entry on vinyl.
Yeah, you'll know them as vinyls.
Yeah. Yes, there's also a mailing list. It's at tinyletter.com/2grownmen. Or maybe 2GM. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's fine. It's hilarious. Thank you to everyone who has sent us feedback. There have actually been a few of you. I haven't told James about all of them, actually. So we do appreciate it. It's really good to know that you are getting something from this show. That's it. Let's go.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. We have gone over. I'll cut the bit where I said we've gone over, though, because I'll cut some stuff from the beginning, probably. Oh, no, I've got to cut that as well.
Twat.
Shit. It's all very confusing.
You've just got several jobs, Nick. Several jobs.